Hi, folkens, and welcome to another exciting episode of Movie Madness. In case you didn't guess, that's Norwegian for hey guys. Hi, folkens. So you learn something new every week. All right, so this is going to be our second part in our exciting look at the best movies of 2012, according to us. And by us, I'm referring to myself, David Double D Dennis, along with co-host A,
Andrew Roebuck,
and co-host A.2.
So I'm what, Andrew? I'm like partially him, or what?
Yes.
Is it?
Oh no!
You're like a second head popping out of his butt.
Get out of here!
Out of his anus? Why am I an anus head?
I just decided this.
This is uncomfortable.
It's Scott 5.0.
It's uncomfortable every time you sit down for both of you.
No, my nose. No, do we move? But yeah, it's Scott 5.0. Man, upgrades every week, man. This experiment. I'm making a lot of money, too, being a guinea pig for these scientists. It's pretty good.
So what was their latest experiment?
Well, their latest experiment was... Actually, they did something with my blood streams, and I can also harness some energy, almost like Goku. It's
kind of
cool, man. I can actually shoot some...
So if we get you too angry, you can go kind of Super Saiyan on us?
Uh-oh.
Yeah, if I can harness my power enough, I'm still training on it, but I mean, I'm able to actually shoot waves of energy, pulses of energy. We're getting up to the Kamehameha, but... It's getting there. It's pretty impressive what we can do with science. I'm amazed to find out what's next.
Awesome. Yeah, you'll probably die pretty soon from all this shit that they're doing to your body, but...
Probably not.
It'll be worth it to see what happens before then, right?
Oh yeah, I'm gonna better the human race.
Yeah. So, it's all worth it in the end. As long as you can stick around for a few more episodes.
Maybe we'll get to 7, who knows, before I die.
Nice. Nice. All right, so this episode we're going to be looking at numbers 6 to 1 of our top 11 list. So shall we get to it, gentlemen?
It has begun.
Yeah.
All right. So we'll begin with me, and then we'll go to Andrew and then Scott. All right, so my number 6 of 2012, a movie that I actually just watched last night, is The Sessions. This is kind of a little bit of a more indie movie that came out. I think it's nominated for maybe one Oscar. But it's about a guy played by John Hawkes in what is easily one of the most underrated performances of the year. And he's this guy who lives his life in an iron lung. And he can only leave it for about 4 hours at a time because it's hard for him to breathe. He has polio, which the unique thing about polio is it doesn't make you paralyzed, so you still, all your nerves work and you can feel everything, but your muscles are too weak for you to actually move. So this guy is in a unique predicament, and I didn't mention this, but this is based on a true story, by the way, that basically... You know, he has normal sexual desires that are a human need, basically, that everyone has, but he has no way to fulfill them. Like, he can't even masturbate. He can't move his hand to be able to pleasure himself, which is very frustrating for him. So, later on in his life...
I thought you were going to say very frustrating for me, and I was like, what, Dave?
What?
I thought you were going to say, he can't masturbate, which is very frustrating for me. I thought you were going to say that.
The whole movie, I just wanted him to masturbate. I just wanted to lend him my hand. Oh, man. No. So basically what he does, because he has a little bit of extra money now, he hires a sex surrogate played by Helen Hunt, who is basically... She describes to him that she's not a prostitute because she doesn't want repeat business. She's basically there to sort of transition him into normal sexuality so that when he's with another sexual partner, he'll be able to please her properly. So it's called The Sessions because he gets 6 sessions with this sex surrogate before he has to move on. And during the course of the movie, they may or may not develop an attachment to each other.
I'm guessing they do.
Oh, you spoiled it. No. Basically, the reason why I like this movie, it's a lot like what we were saying in the last episode about salmon fishing in the Yemen. It's just kind of a nice, quiet sort of break from all these really big, loud movies that come out all the time. And what I like, too, is that even though it's a movie about sex and human sexuality, it doesn't handle it in a way of, like, look at how much sex is in our movie. Look at how gratuitous it is. Like, it doesn't feel gratuitous. It doesn't feel like they're just doing it to sort of capitalize on the idea of someone paying for sex. They handle it actually in a very, very normal, very balanced, very comfortable way that almost makes you forget that you're watching a movie about sex and you just get into a movie about these characters. You just really start caring about this guy. And you may cry while watching this movie. That's my warning that I'll give.
Like, did you cry?
Cry from ecstasy, or
almost a little bit? Yes. Once I finally got over that frustration.
A box of Kleenex later, I was bawling.
So yeah, definitely recommend this movie. Anyone else here see this or?
No, actually, I have not seen this. I had a little bit of an interest in the sessions. It wasn't one of my must-sees, but now that that you recommended it, I will put it up higher on the list.
It's definitely really good. Another highlight of the movie is William H. Macy as the Catholic priest that John Hawkes continuously goes to visit. He's just, everything William H. Macy is in is just wonderful, and he's just great in this movie.
So, you're darn too.
He's basically the most easygoing Catholic priest. He's like, because he explains to him, he's like, Father, I want to do this thing where I go to this surrogate, and he's like, I think Jesus will give you a free pass on this one. It's pretty funny.
You've had a tough life. You can look over
it's
it.
Like, I think in your case, you can get a free pass. I usually don't agree with sex before marriage, but yeah, I say go for it.
You ever seen the show he does, Shameless?
No, I haven't.
I have not either.
Is it good?
Yeah, it's a pretty funny show. It just went on to its third season. Okay. It's based off, I guess it's a remake, an American remake of a British TV show, but it's the same director from the British TV show.
Oh, okay. It's kind of, what's that show? Wilfred kind of did the same thing.
Yeah, William H. Like Macy's more or less an alcoholic. So, he gets in some crazy debacles. Wow! But no, actually go check it out. It's a pretty entertaining TV show.
I kind of want to watch it just because it's William H. Macy and...
And, Joan Cusack. She's hilarious.
Oh, what? I'll have to check that out then. You're darn tootin', I'll check it out.
Nice reference there, my boy. All right, so, Andrew, what is your number 6?
Alrighty, well, now that I have the revelation that I am David Dennis's boy, that is interesting. But my number 6 is back to my usual, you probably haven't heard of this film, and this is Once Upon a Time in Anatolia. This is a film actually from Turkey. And have either of you guys seen or heard anything about this film?
Yeah, actually, I know the director. I went to the premiere. I have it on my shelf.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to guess you're lying.
Where do you find some of these films?
How did you guess that?
Turkey. Like, it's probably a great film, but I don't know. Turkish cinema is not usually my first place to look for a top 12 film of 2012.
Yeah. Well, I kind of follow a lot of like critic circles and I listen to a lot of podcasts, and this actually got kind of recommended to me. And basically, this is kind of like a thriller of sorts. It's basically these group of men are going throughout the Turkish countryside, which is extremely beautiful, and they're searching for this dead body. They have this...
Also beautiful.
Not as beautiful, but they have the suspect who kind of turned himself in, that he killed this person. He's got to lead them to the body, but the problem is he was drunk while he did it, so he doesn't have the best memory as to where he buried her. And a lot of the movie is just them searching for this body on the countryside and just them talking and telling stories to each other about previous cases and just kind of interacting. And it's a really, really interesting film. It's very slow moving. It's very deliberately paced. It's not a fast cut-quicking movie kind of thing. It's definitely slow. It takes its time. And if you're looking for something that is really fast paced, it's probably not what you're gonna look for. It's nothing like Avengers or anything like that. It's very slow and deliberate. It's actually like almost 3 hours long, so it's like a 3 hour long character study basically about all these different police forces and doctors all in this little Turkish city. And the reason I just love this film so much is just a lot of it is for the way it was shot. It has some of the best cinematography I've seen all year. And it was just, I've never been to Turkey. I've never seen anything of the Turkish countryside. So this is kind of an example of movies taking me to a place that I'll probably never be. And it just showing me this interesting story in a whole different light, because I have no idea how law works in Turkey and a lot of these interesting elements. But there are still things the same. So even in Turkey, you can still find things to latch on with these characters and relate to them.
Yes.
All right. I have nothing to add, but it's another one. You'll have to give me your list after this so I can check out some of these movies.
Scott, what is that?
All right. So, well, what's this? My number six.
Okay.
It's now mine. My number six is 21 Jump Street.
Oh, yeah.
I can't say I disagree with that, but yeah, continue. Tell us why it is on this list.
Well, 21 Jump Street, sorry, I just completely blanked on everything. I forgot my name, too. But the reason why I picked 21 Jump Street...
I think it starts with an S.
Satan, thank you. But yeah, why I picked 21 Jump Street? It's a comedy film, really. It honestly, to God, it's a comedy film. It was actually a very refreshing comedy, I felt. I hadn't seen many comedies that really made me laugh and that I really enjoyed, I guess, that weren't just stupid, like stupid comedies where a guy is getting kicked in the nuts by a 3-year-old girl. But I had never seen the TV show. My sister was a big fan of it. I'd heard good things about this movie, so I gave it a watch. And I don't know why I'm blanking so much on everything I possibly want to say. I should go see a doctor, probably.
Oh no!
Yeah, what's wrong with you?
I have no idea. I can't remember a thing I was gonna say.
Let me try and pick up the ball here.
Wow.
Pass it to me.
Let's see. 21 Jump Street. I don't know. Like, I saw this earlier in the year with Mike and Blair. It was fun. Like, the only thing I didn't like about it was it felt like a bit too manic, I think. Like, it was really fast-paced, really crazy. But I think that also
it really was.
Led a
it felt
bit
like it was 40 minutes
as well.
I really like this movie as well. And this movie was kind of hit home with me quite a bit because I kind of related to Jonah Hill's character quite a bit.
Oh, I thought you'd say you're a drug dealer in high school.
Especially when he goes back to high school and they're all, like, accepting of gay people and all this stuff. And he's like, the popular kid now. He's like, why couldn't I have been born 5 years later and I would have been the most popular kid at school?
Yeah,
and that's so true. Like, if I were to go back to high school now, I'd actually probably do okay. But when I was actually in high school, I hated it, and, like, I was the least popular kid in my grade.
I don't think I'd fit in high school anytime. But
wow, I have, like, a completely different high school than both of you.
Was particularly emotional for me because the girl that he has a crush on both looked like the girl I had a crush on in high school and had the same name. So I was like, whoa, what is happening here? This is hitting a little too close to home for me. But yeah, I really thought it was funny as well. It wasn't all just me going, oh, my lovelorn high school. But I loved it as well.
That sounds like the name of a movie, My Lovelorn High School.
It's kind of funny. I think you're just explaining your high school lives, so you didn't really fit in. Wow, I'm completely different. I fit in with, like, every single group in high school. I wasn't really an outcast. It's like you're making your guys seem. I love you guys, though. You're not damn you, Scott. My life.
Uncool people.
We still are the uncool people. Well, I am.
But now we get together and do podcasts so people think that we're cool.
Yeah.
Nah, I don't know if people
but anyways,
honestly
yeah,
think 21 that,
Jump Street was definitely one of the funniest, if not the funniest movie that came out this year, just in terms of pure laughs per minute ratio. This movie would probably win out for me. The only contender I would say is probably This Is 40. I thought,
oh really?
For me, I laughed a lot during that.
Yeah, I would say it's probably like the best high school comedy since I would
very
say like Superbad.
So. Yeah,
yeah, I'd agree with you on that one.
And the most amazing thing about this movie is that it's the movie that made me actually not hate Channing Tatum.
Yeah?
Yeah, I had a big thing against
him,
too.
It gets huge
like,
props
ooh.
For that, because I despise Channing Tatum ever since I saw him in G.I. Joe, and now I actually kind of like the guy. It's weird. It made me do a total 180 on him. I just hope he keeps doing comedies in the future, because he's actually pretty good at it.
Yeah.
And again, sorry I blanked on my own number six.
That's okay. It happens to the best of us. I'm probably going to blank
and
a little
Scott.
Bit on my number five, to be honest with you.
Ooh.
Which
I'll
is...
I'll take the reins. Okay.
The Life of Pi.
Ah.
Not a movie about Pi the food.
3.14?
Yes, 3.14. 3.14
apple pie.
Whatever. Which, that number actually does come up in the film, because
oh, really?
Pi kind of uses his name as, like, when he goes to school, he learns all the different digits of Pi, so that when people start making fun of him for his name, he, like, goes up to the board and starts writing out all the digits of Pi. It's pretty funny, actually. I've never actually read the book that this is based on. My friend did, and she said it was considered unfilmable for the longest time. I think the book came out in like the late 90s or something. So for a book to movie transfer, it did actually take pretty long. Like usually books come out, and then if they're like a bestseller, 2 or 3 years later they'll be turning it into a movie. Life of Pi took a little bit longer and went through a bunch of different directors. But I think they found the right guy. I think Ang Lee was definitely perfect for this movie. It's a movie where the 3D actually suits it. I felt the same way about Hugo last year. Like, I feel like the 3D actually enhanced the experience. Some films, it brings it down. Some films, it doesn't really add anything. The Transformers movies come to mind. But this movie, I felt the 3D actually really allowed it to pop off of the screen. And it's... In terms of cinematography, I'd say this is probably the most gorgeous movie I've seen all year. Especially the fact that they can take just hours of this movie are just spent with him on the ocean. And they make the ocean look so interesting. And if you think about it, it's just the vast blue, watery nothingness. And they make it okay to stare at the ocean for 2 hours. So
yeah, I have a quick thing.
Definitely a very life-affirming, very just warm... I don't know how else to describe this movie. It's just... It'll make you feel good in a good way, in a real way. Not in a fake, like, romantic comedy way.
Yeah, I liked this film. I think the middle of the film is its strongest points. I did have a little bit of, I would say, trepidation with the way the movie starts and the way it ends. I wasn't as big of a fan of. I thought both the bookends were kind of a little iffy for me. But once it got to like the visuals and stuff like that, it just completely blew me away. And the other part were about the start of it. A lot of the film is kind of about the beauty of nature. And a lot of the animals in the film are kind of CG. While I understand for the boat, all that stuff like was kind of required to be CG. It just, at the start, when they're in the zoo, it didn't feel as real to me because... They were CG animals, but other than that, I did think it was a very good film, so. Yeah.
All right. So, Scott, I'm guessing you did not see this one yet?
I don't think I'm going to. Honestly, it didn't look that appealing to me personally. I'm not saying it's bad, it just... I don't know, I watched the trailer, so it just didn't really give me any emotion to go watch it.
Huh. Okay.
I'm being honest.
I can't really argue with that. It's your opinion. Because that's
you could sway me. You could sway me, Dave.
I already did. I gave you like a 5-minute speech on why this movie is good.
Try harder.
If that this movie will cause you to have more blowjobs.
Per what? Minute or
and,
like,
oh my gosh, I'm gonna watch this movie.
It'll improve your blowjob per minute ratio. Also, right. You will enjoy the taste of food more.
I thought you were gonna say something else. I'm glad you said food.
You'll enjoy the taste of everything more. If you catch
Yay.
My drift.
Ooh, chicken la. Will taste better.
Chicken will
taste,
like
less like
chicken. All right, let's
go. So,
let's
if that doesn't make you want to watch this movie... Oh, and you'll discover the meaning of life.
I don't really want to know the meaning
and,
of life.
And, I don't know. You will self-actualize by watching this movie. That's how good it is.
Will I ascend to the next plane of existence?
Yes. You will ascend this mortal plane.
Okay.
That's why you should watch Life of Pi. Have I convinced you yet?
No. Andrew, what's
also, whatever.
Also, you'll get
Let's
a free you'll get a free kitten with every viewing of the film.
But I already have a kitty.
But you could always use more. Anyways.
You'll get a t-shirt that says, I watched The Life of Pi and all I got was this stupid t-shirt.
And kitten.
Tempting. Tempting.
And kitten in brackets.
Or if it's a kitty t-shirt for the kitty.
Oh, yeah.
Now I think you're looking too far into it.
I am.
Anyways.
I'm dragging this on.
Number 5, Andrew.
Yes, my number 5 is actually one we talked about earlier, and it's Paranorman. I absolutely...
Wow, way higher on your list.
Yeah,
But that's okay, there's ones that are way higher on mine, so...
Yeah, I really, really loved Paranorman. I kind of recommended it to my friend, and he was like... I didn't like it that much, but I felt as I was watching it, it was like I was watching you as a child, and I was like, yeah, I am fairly biased towards this film because it was so relatable to me. The whole outcast storyline, and it just, it was kind of had some really, it had a little bit of the immature humor that was always enjoyable, but it also had some really interesting mature humor moments, and I thought it had a little bit more to say than your average animated film, and I could just relate to it a lot. So it was a very relatable, fun movie because I love horror movies so much, and it was just such a loving tribute to all of the horror movies of old while bringing some new stuff to the table. So I thoroughly enjoyed this film. Yeah.
Awesome. Sorry, I was just swallowing my saliva.
Oh,
yeah,
no.
Yeah. Like, I already pretty much talked about Paranorman earlier, everything I really wanted to say.
I wanted to see it. It looked like a fun film.
It is.
Especially if you like zombie movies and movie spoofs. It's like a zombie movie spoof, but for kids. So it's not as gory or anything, and the zombies don't actually kill anyone. It's definitely... I wouldn't recommend it for really young kids. Like, under 8, maybe, would probably be too scary for them. But it's definitely a film I got into a lot more than I thought I would. And has a really good lesson to teach, basically, about not judging people by their cover.
By their covers?
Album covers?
Or not judging... yes. Not judging books by their covers being a metaphor for people.
So the Necronomicon, because that is the book of human flesh.
What?
So
the Necronomicon.
The Necronomicon. Yeah.
That's the only person that is a cover.
Shout out to Necronomicon.
Anyways. Which actually kind of... it doesn't really relate to Paranorman, but, you know, it's a paranormal thing.
Ba-dum-bum. So,
tied it in a little bit there. All right, so number 5, Scott.
Well, let's keep it on the animated route here. My number 5 film is Wreck-It Ralph.
Nice. This is another one that I'll be getting to a little bit in a little while.
I will not be.
I want to know about you, Andrew. Did you not like Wreck-It Ralph? What's going on here?
Nah, that didn't really do it for me.
I'm gonna wreck you.
I felt it was kind of more of a typical kids film, but I don't want to crap on Scott's choice. So just wasn't as much as
man.
I was
we had such a good flow, and now this, Andrew.
Yeah, I'm gonna say this is my biggest disagreement. I think you need to go and watch Wreck-It Ralph again.
I will.
Like, this is a film.
I think you might like it more.
Anyone who's born 80s to early 90s, this is the film you wanted your entire childhood.
Like, wanted a better version.
when I first heard this was coming out in, I think E3, they announced it, actually. Very fitting. I saw the trailer for it. I see Sonic the Hedgehog, Dr. Robotnik, Ryu, House of the Dead Zombie. The list goes on and on. Q-Bert. All these lovable game characters in a film, a Disney film, which makes it even better for me. I love Disney. So I was so excited to go see this. I think I saw it like the day it came out or the day after. But something in there took me back to my childhood. Just seeing all these characters, these game characters, going on to Andrew's whole thing of his top 10 films, being able to relate to them. I'm watching this and just seeing characters I've loved my whole life coming up onto the screen. A lot of video game jokes for, like, hardcore gamers. One of them I noticed was, it's a Street Fighter 2 thing, not Shenlong. I can't remember his name, but it was a whole Easter egg about this one character supposed to be in the game, and it went on for years, but it never really was. And there's a graffiti in the train station when Ralph's getting off after the, Villains Anonymous meeting, and it says the character's name was here. There's just so many little details that made this film phenomenal in my eyes. My favorite animated film of the year, for sure.
I agree, actually. Yeah, this, I put Paranorman on my list as well. That would be my second favorite, but Wreck-It Ralph is easily my favorite animated film of 2012. I'll get to more of the reasons why I liked it when we get to where it falls on my list. But I agree with everything you said, that definitely when I saw the trailer for this, I was like, not only was this the movie that I wanted, but I had an idea, like maybe 5-10 years ago, about a movie that was basically exactly like this. But I'm glad that these people made it instead of like me writing it 10 years from now, because it wouldn't have been as good, I think, if I was the one who created it.
Man, it hits so many notes perfectly.
I definitely like all the elements you're talking about in the film, and I was impressed by all the references and stuff like that. I just felt it spent too much time on characters I didn't really know and didn't really have much connection to, and didn't really care
Wreck-It
for
Ralph's
as
not
much.
A real video
that,
game,
that's just
though,
my
so.
Kind of opinion. I felt it was a little too kiddy and not as mature as I was expecting it to be. I will shut up about it. I will
Ralph,
shut up
what's the meaning of
guy.
Life? Did you say it wasn't as mature as you would have liked it to be?
Yes, I did.
It didn't have enough sex scenes, I think.
What were you expecting? I seriously want to know, Andrew, what were you expecting? It wasn't as mature as you thought it would be.
Well, by mature, I mean on Pixar standard. I don't think it was the Pixar standard that I put towards films like The Incredibles or WALL-E or something like that, where it had more of a deeper message than... I felt Wreck-It Ralph was a little bit more surface level. I don't want to continue hating, though.
See, I think it didn't really... For me, it didn't really need...
Yeah,
to be that,
I
like,
didn't think
that,
so either.
Like, WALL-E level of mature. Just mostly because of the source material. Like, you're dealing with video games, especially a lot of, like, Mario and Sonic references and games that younger kids can relate to. So, in that sense... I like the message that they were trying to tell, and I like the story that they were telling.
It was a good message for kids. Be who you are.
I will agree, some of the humor was a little bit juvenile, but again, I felt like it fit the tone of the movie. Like, it didn't really take me out of it. Like, sometimes in a... DreamWorks is really bad for this, where they tell a really stupid juvenile joke, and for me, it's like, it's not even funny. It just sort of takes me out of the moment. Mm-hmm. This movie didn't really have any moments like that for me. So.
Well, especially in the age we live in now, as a whole, like, just be who you are, man. You can't change who you are. Accept who you are and try to find all your strengths.
Yeah.
Especially in an age that we're dominated with media telling us that you're shit. You're not as good as you could be. This film relating to stuff kids like, these colorful video games like this, and I don't know, I felt it was a very good story. Especially for that aspect there.
I think you could almost throw this and Paranorman into a similar category in terms of the lessons that they're trying to teach. To be comfortable with who you are, to not judge people by the way they look, and to accept other people for their strengths as well as their weaknesses and the things that make them different. So,
like Hubert.
Definitely. If I ever have children, these are movies that I'll show them at some point.
Yeah.
Forcibly. They'll have to watch them.
It'll be like Clockwork Orange. You'll put your kid in a chair and you'll keep their eyes open and just screen just put,
like drops
film.
Of water in their eyes.
100 films on 100 TVs. Watch them all, Daddy. I have to stop.
Oh man. All right. So number four. For me, it's one that we already talked about on the previous show. For my number four was The Avengers, which I kind of already said that it was the most fun I had this year. It was my favorite summer movie of the year, which for me is why it got so high on this list. The movies that are above it, I think, have a little bit more of a deeper meaning to me personally, but The Avengers was the movie that I just kept watching over and over again, and I never stopped having fun with it. Just great action, great characters, great dialogue. Great humor. It's a very funny movie in a lot of parts, and it's very fun. I don't know if there's anything else we can say about this movie.
We really summed it up already.
We picked it apart already. So, I guess we'll just move on. We're bored with The Avengers.
I could never be bored with The Avengers, but...
We're bored with talking about The Avengers, I should say. I'll never be bored of actually watching it. I'll say that.
All right.
So, Andrew, what is your number four?
My number four is Looper. And this is a movie...
Another movie we're bored of talking about.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, all right. I'll stop talking about it.
No, I'm just kidding.
My number four is... Oh,
okay. You haven't really waited... Like, me and Scott have done our little... spiels on it, but you haven't given your spiel.
I've been a fan of Rian Johnson for a long, long time. Like, ever since I watched Brick, I've been kind of eagerly watching his career grow and expand, and I've been listening to him on podcasts, and it's...
Yeah, same here.
I've just really come to enjoy him as a personality on, like, Twitter and everything like that. So just seeing him make such an awesome science fiction film... So with references to time travel, things like The Terminator, like there's a very deliberate Terminator reference I felt, and a few other like really impressive kind of sci-fi references. I listened to the commentary on this, and he mentioned like he got some inspiration from great films like Akira and that kind of stuff. And another thing that I really found interesting about this film is in the commentary, it was really kind of like a coming together of Rian Johnson's whole family. Like his, I believe it's his cousin or his brother that does the music for the film, and most of his family members actually appear in the film, like acting wise. So it just kind of, I thought that was a really interesting element to add, and I just really loved the writing for the film. The action I thought was fantastic, and
the sound
really
design
cool,
was great.
Cool cast of characters. So yeah. That is my opinion on The Loopers, a film that...
I never really thought about it before, but you mentioned Akira, and now I can definitely see, like, a big Akira influence in this movie. Definitely. Another one that it kind of kept reminding me of was 12 Monkeys, which also had Bruce Willis in it, but that's kind of the obvious reference when you're watching Looper. So yeah. Scott, what is your number four?
My number four is a little-known film that Dave may have talked about called Moonrise Kingdom.
Oh, yeah.
Alrighty.
Look at this. These last few have been... We talked about this one.
Yeah. Well, that's good. It means that we liked a lot of the same films.
It's always good. though, that we do have similar tastes like
that.
Because
but... Moonrise Kingdom is a very likable movie, I think.
Oh, very much so. I've turned many people onto it, telling them to watch it. But one thing I have to say what I loved about this film, again, relating to it, being I was in Boy Scouts for a good 10 years. I love it. I loved it. It was the best years of my childhood. And just also the aspect of young love, like falling in quote-unquote love at that age. It's such a magical thing to experience at that age, I felt. Like, you feel like this is the person you're going to be with the rest of your life. And you're just so accepting at that age. You don't really judge somebody.
Yeah.
And just seeing how these two, they were writing letters to each other, and they just ran away. And just the way that whole aspect of the film played out, like, them living together on the beach, taking the Chippewa Trail, and making the Moonrise Kingdom. Just the two children in love, just spending moments with each other, just carefree moments. That's what I loved about that film.
Sorry.
Oh, you know, Dave, you get on your topic you're about to speak of.
I was just going to say the only other movies or kind of group of movies that really handle kids in love really well, it would be the Studio Ghibli films, I think.
Oh, that's another show, man.
But
oh.
Yeah, that's a whole other
topic.
That's a whole 6 months. But getting off of that, like you said, that was something I didn't really mention was... the idea of kids being in love, which can be kind of ludicrous, and you kind of look at it at first and think, "Oh, that never happens." But then you think back to your own childhood, and
that happened.
I mean, I don't think I was ever in love with any girl that was really in love back with me, unless maybe they were just bad at showing it. But I definitely really had super strong delusional crushes on girls. And thought, I need to be with this girl. She's the one for me. And we're going to spend
those are
the
rest days.
Of our lives together as soon as I can convince her to go on one date with me.
Wait, that's supposed to stop?
I'm just going to go, but...
Hmm?
I said, wait, that's supposed to stop? You're supposed to stop doing that? Uh-oh.
but I don't really think that... I think I'm a lot more tainted now. In our last show, we kind of talked about the Before Sunrise movies. I think I'm way closer to the Before Sunset mode now, kind of going into Before Midnight. You're probably still in the Before Sunrise stage, Andrew, which is good. I would tell you not to stop being like that, because I almost miss being that delusional. I don't know why.
I miss that.
Comforting, and now I don't really have that as much anymore. More realistic. I think now that I actually can, I'm more confident. I have more of the ability to get girls to go out with me. So it's I don't have to be as delusional about it. It's more realistic. It's something that could happen.
Yeah.
So it's it's less magical almost.
We're getting into
a really existential topic here.
Oh, I still got a bit more,
movie.
Man. I'm not even done. I was just going to say, going on that whole thing, I remember, funny story about it, back when I was, 4 years old or whatever, in kindergarten, there was this one girl, she was probably, I didn't really have, people I'd consider friends, because it's my first thing in school in kindergarten, but it was this one girl, her and I, we were quote-unquote, we loved each other. I would go to her house and we'd hang out, my mom would be there, and I'd always call her dad father-in-law. But I'd come up with, a firm handshake. A tiny 4-year-old boy, I'm like, "Hello, father-in-law, how are you?" And I'm like, I don't know why I was like this. But I'm just,
like an amazing kid. I wish I had known you as a small child.
But I was fine. Saying things that I assume adults not to be like, I had no idea. I'm like, "Did you read the newspaper today?" And I'm just trying to be very adult about this. And I didn't even read the newspaper at 4, but every time, and he'd always get a chuckle at it, same with her mom and my mom. I hung out with her every day after school, and then she moved to Nova Scotia a few years later. I tried to get back in touch with her a few years back, but we talked for a bit, and then we just stopped talking, I guess. But I just miss that, being a child like that, and it was, I'm gonna go into a sad, depressive state again.
Aww.
But also what I loved about Moonrise Kingdom is what you're saying with the shots he took. My favorite shot of that whole film has to be when Susie and Sam are on two separate rocks in the lagoon. It's in the trailer, and they do that. He does that zoom on both of them, and it looks like that really cheesy. I feel like a Spanish kind of, I guess, melodrama, Spanish drama.
Yeah, it's like a 70s, like a 70s foreign film.
And ooh, I love that.
Like a Franco Zeffirelli or whatever.
You're just making names up now. But
like really weird.
But that is my favorite shot in that whole film. Just, I don't know, it just proves, I guess, to me how fun that film really is. And the acting, the actors that Wes Anderson got for it. None of them had a bad scene.
Yeah, I like how he gets all of his actors to play against type as well. Like, none of them are really...
Mm-hmm.
In any of his films, really, like, none of his characters ever... Or none of his actors ever play characters that are similar to characters they always play. Like, it's never characters they're entirely comfortable with.
Well, I feel the closest would be Bruce Willis, but he wasn't a macho cop. He was kind of the timid...
Yeah, he was, like... He was actually kind of a lovable, like, a very caring cop. So, very different. Like, I think if that cop had met John McClane, I don't think they would have gotten along.
No.
No, definitely not.
It's string theory, John McClane.
It's what?
It's string theory, John McClane.
Where he travels back to 1960.
And adopting children.
Everything with Bruce Willis goes back to time travel somehow.
But, no, let's not talk about it. We'll be making diagrams of straws and...
Then we'll be here all day.
But yeah, that's all I got to say about Moonrise Kingdom for now. We got to keep the show going.
Yeah, keep it flowing. Well, that's okay, because we took really short amount of time for some of the earlier ones. And
okay.
This next one for me will be another one that's going to be pretty short, because we already kind of dissected it. My number three is Wreck-It Ralph, which we already talked about. I don't know, I'm on the opposite side of the fence as Andrew with this one, and I really, really connected with this movie. I wanted to go see it again. I never got a chance to, so I've only seen it once.
It comes out on my birthday, and this is all I want for my birthday from my mom and my sisters. I'm like, what do you want, Mike? Just give me Wreck-It Ralph. That's all I want.
Yeah,
it comes out on my birthday.
Once it comes out
on
Blu-ray, it's definitely going to be like, I'll pick it up that Tuesday, pretty much. But... I think one thing we never really talked about was just the characters in this movie and how much I really connected to their story and their plight for a kids' movie. We kind of touched on that with Paranorman, but I think even more so in Wreck-It Ralph, the idea of this character that's basically like almost predestined to be a villain for the rest of his life, it's actually oddly existential for a kid's film, the idea of breaking free from your programming, and basically that relating back to people breaking free from
the Matrix,
their lifestyle and the environment that they were raised in. That just because you were raised in a bad environment doesn't mean you have to be a bad person, and even though people call you a bad person, it doesn't make you a bad person. And again, just a very good lesson, and a very fun story as well. It's a movie I really got into the storyline, and even some of the subplots, like the Fix-It Felix, when he meets up with the girl from Hero's Duty, and then they end up going to try and find Ralph, and they have like a really good chemistry together.
And I also found
Alan Tudyk as the bad guy.
Yes.
The voice acting in this movie was just, like, perfect.
Top-notch.
I think they got the perfect cast for it. I love John C. Reilly in just about everything, so...
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing I also like is, again, some of the, I guess, stereotypes, I guess, they played on. One thing I liked is, like, so what's her backstory? It's like, oh, she has the most tragic backstory ever written.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was so funny. She's just she's a damaged woman... Her job and love life ruined. That's like, that was so funny. At the altar, the bug came and killed her husband to be. She could never love again.
That's something that could have been really like tragic and dark, but they play it up for laughs, and it's perfect. Especially since, like you said, it's like a stereotype in video games that you have to give your character like the super damaged backstory of like,
All his family had to be murdered by something they loved or something like that. Now they can't love it anymore, but they must learn to love it and all this weird stuff. But again, the story still, what we were saying earlier, the fact we were going on the existentialism of breaking free of your programming. Like, Ralph is, I guess you could say, going from a children's point of view, the villain, almost like the loser in school, and he just wants to be popular. Like, Felix in this game is the most popular cat on the block. He's having the parties all the time, getting his hero medals, getting the recognition. And just, I guess, going to kids, sometimes when you feel like you're not good enough, like, there's always that person who's better at you than something, and you just want that glory. No, well, that almost made it sound like I was saying you're never going to achieve it. Yeah. We all can at one point or another in our lives. Yeah. Except Andrew, apparently.
Which is funny, because you related to Paranorman. Paranorman, 21 Jump Street. We related to Wreck-It Ralph, but...
Yeah.
I think you need to watch it again.
I'll get around to
Party
it eventually.
Party at my place!
Eventually.
That's okay. I don't hate you for not loving it. I'll forgive you.
Oh, I know I have some stupid movie choices, picks myself, so no
whoa,
judgment.
Whoa, what are you saying?
Mean,
you
oh, no, no, stupid... okay, that made me sound like
whoa,
I called your
whoa,
movie picks
whoa.
Stupid. I'm sorry, your movie picks are not stupid.
I'm just kidding.
I'm saying that I occasionally can
balls.
Have stupid movie picks. Your movie picks are good. No hating.
I just want to bust your balls a bit, Andrew. I love you. I will console you and hold you in the coldest of nights. you can be Big Spoon, hey. I'll be Big Spoon. It's all right with me.
Okay.
Dave, you can join in
we'll
too. You can be Littlest
after
Spoon.
This recording
we can
session.
Be like the measuring cups when they all stack into each other. Wait, never that town. Never mind. Let's strike that. Reverse it.
Let's move
be
on.
Alrighty. So
number three.
Alrighty, my number three was my number one up until 2 weeks ago. So this has been a film that I had been loving for a long, long time, and that is Your
Resident
Sister's
Evil
Sister.
Retribution.
Oh, hello?
Oh, yes. Resident Evil Retribution, right? Okay, continue.
Yeah, definitely. No, Your Sister's Sister. Did any of you guys get a chance to see this film at all?
No, I don't even think I've heard of it.
Yeah, it's more of an independent film.
I'm IMDb-ing it right now.
It's more
you know,
of an independent film.
We should just
film.
Take
sorry.
That most of the films, Andrew says, we probably have not seen. We should, we're lucky that we got to hear a few that we had heard of.
I hate to be that guy, but anyways.
no, it's okay.
It's just like
you're culturing
a really
the rest of us.
Interesting movie about love and death and that kind of stuff, and I really related to the main character played by Mark Duplass and his relationship with Emily Blunt in the film. They're basically just best friends throughout the movie, and just they're kind of finally kind of finding out there's something more between us between them than they thought. So yeah, basically I'll just kind of give a rundown of the plot a little bit. Storyline is mourning the death of his brother, Jack's friends, Iris, which is played by Emily Blunt, invites him to her father's cottage for some time, alone time to recuperate. Unbeknownst to either of them, Iris's sister Hannah is staying at the father's cottage, recovering from her recent breakup. One entire bottle of tequila later, Jack and Hannah wake up to find Iris at the door, and they find they each have secrets they're trying to keep from the other people, and just... it's just kind of a really interesting film, and it's really kind of a love story, a very kind of romantic love story. Oh, well, look at that. Scott apparently knows how I feel.
I like Mark Duplass, and I've been, even though he's probably my least favorite character on The League, the show that he's on, I like him as an actor, if that makes any sense. I just don't really like the character of Pete that he plays on that show. But, like, I really liked him in another movie that came out this year, kind of an honorable mention for my list, which is Safety Not Guaranteed.
Oh, yeah. That was... I actually saw Safety Not Guaranteed in Your Sister's Sister, like, in the same kind of night, almost. So I had a Duplass...
Nice.
Yeah. And I related to both films, but...
I also found it kind of weird when
that...
I... Sorry, continue.
Okay, I was just going to say that it had recently had a thing with a girl that was very similar to your sister's sister while it was like right around that time period. So it was a film that kind of came around at the right time and the right place. And just I could really relate to the friendship that they had, and it made me think upon my own life. So it's a film that I haven't actually got to rewatch since I first saw it, but when I first watched it, I really had a gut reaction to it, and I really fell in love with it.
This is totally random, and it has nothing to do with the film you're talking about, but did you see Zero Dark Thirty?
Oh,
I want to. It looks sick.
Did I see Zero Dark Thirty? I don't know, Dave. I don't know.
Wait in 10 minutes.
Oh.
I'm guessing that means yes.
Yes, it may be appearing later.
Oh, okay. So, I'm just curious if you were surprised when Mark Duplass shows up for like 5 minutes at the end of the movie.
Definitely, yeah. That was one of the things
I was like,
I was
what
like,
the hell are you doing in here?
Hey, it's Mark Duplass. Where'd you come from?
Yeah, it's very weird kind of casting. But he does a good job in that, so.
Yeah, I so far haven't seen him in anything I disliked him in, but I haven't seen a lot of Duplass of the Mark.
Okay. Yeah, again, it's a hard movie to talk about because I haven't really seen it. Now that once I looked it up on IMDb, I realized I have heard of it before. I just sort of forgot about it. So again, I added it. I just typed it into my movies to watch list.
Yay!
So, what are we on? Scott, number
three.
Well, my third film of the year
is?
I was just trying to mess with you in case you thought that you lost connection with me or something, but I wanted the suspense to grow too.
I thought I did, actually. I was a little bit scared. I was like, Scott, what happened?
Scott's dead.
You're going so well.
Well, my third film pick, sorry, my third pick of the year is The Hunger Games.
Ooh.
Now I know because you put Hunger Games 2, what was it, Catching Fire as like your number one anticipated film. You like this movie a lot more than I did, I think. I'm gonna go a little bit Wreck-It Ralph on this one.
It at work all the time, man. We will put Netflix on at work, and I'm like, put on Hunger Games today. Put on Hunger Games. I seriously like this movie a lot. It was very unexpected for me, that's why. I had not read the books. I'd heard good things. Actually, it was a very spur of the moment to go to the movie theater. The local theater near my house, I was on my Facebook on my phone, and they're like, we're having a Hunger Games midnight release tonight. And honestly, originally I wasn't really sure if I was going to go check the film out. So I was talking to my sister. I'm like, hey, you want to go see Hunger Games? It's playing at midnight tonight. And she's like, yes, I want to see it. Let's go. I'm like, okay. So I went and bought tickets for us, and we went. And again, being so under the radar for everything about this film, something about it I really loved, especially knowing that people have been comparing it to Battle Royale, a film that I really like. I was very interested to see where these comparisons were coming and going and such. And I was really surprised with what came out. In my personal opinion, Dave, I liked it a lot. Again, I wish it was...
I think this is maybe like what I recommended to Andrew with Wreck-It Ralph. Like, I might need to just watch this movie again. I only saw it once. I think when the new one comes out, I'll probably watch it again. I might like it a little bit more. I do love Jennifer Lawrence, and we may be
she's
talking
naked
a
in it for
more
5 minutes
later on.
She's nude in a good part of it.
But what were you saying?
I said she's nude in the director's cut, Dave. You got to watch it.
What?
No, she's not. I would know these things. Don't try and pull this on me.
That's true. Every day I go onto Google and look up Jennifer Lawrence nude, okay? If it existed, I would know.
I know Jennifer Lawrence will never want to be on our show.
I don't want to get Scott mad, so I may not share my opinions on The Hunger Games. Let's just say I did not
share them.
I actually hated this movie, to be honest with you. I did not like The Hunger Games at all, and I really like Jennifer Lawrence, and I just thought that the camera work in this film was terrible. I hated the pointless use of exposition. I didn't think that the acting was necessarily as strong. I thought that Woody Harrelson was a terrible choice for Haymitch. Lenny Kravitz wasn't good enough for you? And I didn't like this film at all.
Well, also, you and I both are coming from two different places. You've read the books, yes?
I finished the book as soon as I got into the movie theater, so it was something like I was fresh off reading the book, and that may have tainted my experiences quite a bit, but I just wasn't a fan of this at all.
We're all entitled, man. And yeah, again, that made me want to read the book, in all honesty. And we already gotten a whole book discussion before with me and them novels, how long it takes me.
Yeah, no, understandable.
Yeah. I think I'm a little bit between you guys on this movie. I didn't hate it. I didn't love it either. It was very meh for me. So, and I know it's one of those movies, it's very polarizing, as we're seeing in this show. A lot of people really, really liked it, or they didn't. And for me, I think I fall a little bit closer to the didn't like it. It just didn't really do it for me. But I didn't hate it. I think what kind of killed it was like the spur of the moment romance that happens towards the end of the movie. I felt was a little unnecessary, although it's probably in the book, but still, I don't care. When I'm watching a movie, I'm not really thinking about, like, it better be close to the source material. I just want it to be good in its own right.
And that's why Dave watches porn parodies.
Hmm?
I said, that's why Dave watches porn parodies. They don't follow the source material. They're close enough.
No, there I am comparing it to the source material. It better hold up.
Splooge
Seinfeld, the XXX parody better be as good as a real Seinfeld episode.
This ain't
not
Glee.
Worth watching.
This ain't Glee better have all the songs that I love.
Alright, so where are we? Number two. Right?
Number two.
Okay. My number two, we keep going into stuff we've talked about before. People are going to stop listening to this show eventually, honestly. My number two is Seven Psychopaths, which it's similar to what happened with you, Andrew, where it was number one for me for the longest time ever since I first saw it. And then just recently it got pushed down to number two on my list, which we'll get to number one in a little bit. But for whatever reason, I just really... like, really connected to this movie in terms of, like, the script, I guess, from, like, a screenplay standpoint. Like, I feel like the characters were perfectly written, the dialogue was perfectly written, and the humor sort of comes and goes through the movie just perfectly. And there's little, almost, like, subtle hints at certain things, like the character mentioned, like, this would be a perfect place for a gunfight. And then later on in the movie, there actually is a gunfight. Or yeah. Marty's character says something like, I want the ending of this movie to just be like, I don't want there to be any action. I just want people to be sitting around talking. And then Sam Rockwell's character is like, that would be really boring. There needs to be a gunfight. And it turns out the actual end of the movie is like both things. Like they do sit around in a tent and talk for like a good 10, 15 minutes. And then it's followed by a gunfight. So... there's a lot of little subtle details in the script like that I really liked. But just from a story standpoint, there's lots of cool little subplots in this movie. It's a very detailed, very layered film. And there's pretty much everything you could want out of a movie in this. And just perfectly comedically timed, perfectly paced, brilliant performances by everyone. Woody Harrelson, Christopher Walken, everyone just top of their A game here. Even Colin Farrell, I'm not a huge fan of him as an actor, but I felt like he did a really good job here playing the stereotypical alcoholic screenwriter.
I still need to watch it.
It's good.
And that's where we'll leave it off. It's good. Okay, so... Andrew, what else was good?
Well, this was not good. It was great, as Tony the Tiger may say.
I was just going to say, Frosted Flakes the movie.
Sorry?
Frosted Flakes the movie. That was great.
My number two choice is probably something if you're following critics at all, is a film that you've been hearing a lot about and maybe you haven't seen yet, or maybe you have, and that is Zero Dark Thirty. I know, Dave, you just mentioned this film a few minutes earlier. But
yeah, with Mark Duplass's random moment.
Yeah, and what I was really impressed about with this movie was just how it didn't pull any punches, and to me it didn't feel like it was, like, hurrah, pro-American, like, it wasn't America, fuck mm-hmm. yeah. It felt like a very mature, introspective look at just how they managed to catch Osama bin Laden, and all the trials and tribulations they went through trying to catch him. And some of the torture scenes are really hard to watch, but I don't think it endorses torture like some of the criticism it's getting in. It's very bipartisan towards mm-hmm. torture. And one of the more interesting aspects I've thought about the films in regard to the torture segments is that normally when people are tortured, the general comment where people say, these people are being treated like animals. And I think Kathryn Bigelow very intentionally sows characters throughout the film acting with animals in a positive way. Like the one character has these pet monkeys and he's feeding them throughout the film and he's kind of treating them way better than they are treating these prisoners. So I thought that was maybe an interesting little point to the whole torture debate, how it kind of, they're not even treated like animals. These people are treated like subhuman, and it's really terrible. And I also thought it was surprisingly critical of the Obama administration, because at one point in the film, it's like a 60 Minutes interview, and in that interview, Obama says, "We do not do torture." And yet the characters in the film are coming back from doing a torture session. And it was really surprising to me that they just out and out called Obama a liar. And I just thought it was a really interesting look at the film. And Jessica Chastain, if she doesn't get the Oscar for this film, I will be flipping tables, because her performance was just amazing.
To be honest, number two. I'm rooting for, what's her name, Emmanuel Riva.
Oh, are they in the same category? Oh,
yeah.
No. Oh, no.
that's who I want to win.
Oh, no.
But I think Jessica Chastain will win. Now, this is a movie that actually was on my top 11, I think, until I saw, Searching for Sugar Man. I think after I saw that, I sort of kicked Zero Dark Thirty out just to make room, which I feel kind of bad for it, because I love this movie. I really did. And it was just a matter of, like, looking at my list, and I was like, which of these movies do I feel the least bad about kicking off? And I think it came down to, like, I know this is probably going to be on Andrew's list, and we'll probably talk about it anyways, and it's on, like, every other critic's top 10 list, so I want my list to be a little bit more unique, so I think that's the main reason why I kicked it off, just to be different, I guess. But I love this movie. I think you basically talked about all the same reasons that I really liked it. It didn't pull any punches. I don't feel it promoted torture either. I feel like it just showed torture because it was something that happened and they weren't really censoring what happened in the search. They were just saying, this is what happened. This is what these people did in order to find bin Laden. Whether it was a good thing or not is up to you as an audience member to decide. Like, was it good that they tortured these people so they could get what they wanted? Or should they have not tortured them and then it might have taken longer?
Yeah.
I don't know.
And also kind of an interesting element to the film is we'd lived through a lot of the scenes they've shown in this movie, like the London bombings and stuff like that. That stuff we had seen on TV. And just to see it, like, done in a film sense, you'd be like, oh, wow, that I almost forgot that this entirely happened. And I just kind of remember seeing the reports on it, and you're like, wow, I lived through this. And I think this is kind of just one of the most important films of the year in that sense. It's kind of it's one of the films that 2012 will be kind of remembered for, in my opinion.
Yeah,
I'm
a big fan of
more
movies
and more
that are all, like, kind of current events. Like, I really like The Social Network for the same reason. Like, I like movies that kind of somehow relate to something important that happened in the last 5 to 10 years.
Yeah,
and this movie is very much probably probably the most important overall thread of human history since 2001. So, and done in Mark Bull's script is absolutely brilliant in this movie. Just probably the best thriller that came out this year, I would say.
Oh, yeah. And it's just amazing to think that this is the same director that made Point Break and Near Dark. Two films that I really love, but it's just such a dramatic change. And it feels like she's, Kathryn Bigelow really has matured as a director.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was afraid this movie was actually going to be the same as The Hurt Locker, because it's all like a similar setting.
Yeah.
But it wasn't. Like, The Hurt Locker was very, it was more closed off, like it was kind of a character study of just looking at Jeremy Renner and maybe like the two or three people that surrounded him. But it was really just digging into him as a character. And Zero Dark Thirty was a much bigger film. It had a wider cast of characters. It goes all over the world. Like, it's not just set in one setting. It's not as bottled, I guess, as The Hurt Locker was. It's a very open, very big movie. So, yeah, definitely recommended.
And I definitely want to check it out.
Yeah, I would say you should do that. Okay, so Scott, you're number two.
My number two film is dun 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 dun
Battleship. Skyfall.
No, I was thinking about pulling that for like the fourth time, but no, it's Skyfall.
Nice. Now this for me was another one that got kicked off of my list just recently. Like it was on there for the longest time, and I had to make room for the sessions because I like that movie so much.
Yeah, same with me. It just barely got knocked off, but yeah, I really like this film too.
Actually, Skyfall would be my number 12, I think. If this is a best top 12 instead of a top 11, it would be like just below, and then Zero Dark Thirty would probably be number 13. Like, they're just barely not on the list.
Yeah, so Skyfall almost didn't make it on mine either. It was close to being. I'm just kidding.
Okay. I was gonna say, like, it's number two. It's number two, high, yes, up to be kicked off.
No, I love this film. I think I saw it like 3-4 times in theaters. I was just gonna say,
as a James Bond fan, I definitely love Skyfall. I feel like 2012 was the year of Bond for me because I watched every Bond movie in a row. I really got into James Bond. I got some of the books in audiobook form, and I've been listening to them. Yeah, and this movie really lived up to it. Like, this is probably, in some ways, Casino Royale might be a little bit better, but this is arguably the best Daniel Craig Bond film, and arguably the best Bond film in general of, like, the last 20
years. Man. So. Man with the golden gun's where it's at.
All right. But, so, Scott, this is on your list, so you should tell us.
And Dave's telling everyone.
Yeah, I'm babbling on about your film, so I apologize.
We should actually sort of have an episode where Andrew and I say titles of films, and Dave explains them.
Dave explains movies.
So Dave has to guess what I'm talking about, then?
Yeah.
Yeah, some of them I won't even know. I'll just make it up. If it's like an obscure Andrew movie, I'll just like hear the title and make up an entire plot around it.
All right, but yeah, so Skyfall. Let's get back on that, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I've been looking forward to this film for a long time. Again, I don't want to harp on Quantum of Solace and how I wanted a new James Bond film. When I wasn't sure what the actual title was, I forgot about James Bond for a bit after Skyfall, actually. And I've been waiting for this new film, because I've been enjoying Daniel Craig as Bond, and I was hoping for his next adventure. And I found out this was coming out this year. I got pretty stoked. Me and my sister went to go see this film, and I was so blown away by it. It just brought me back right into Bond. And made me love it more than I had ever loved Bond. In bed, I loved him once. But something about this film, some people might have hated it. I liked some of the nods, especially the very obvious nods to classic Bond films. Again, When Q references, what did you expect, an exploding pen? We don't do that anymore. When he goes to the garage to get the Goldfinger, Aston Martin even pulls out the ejector. And even the final scene of that film, I felt exactly like a classic Bond film. Just the same door when he's going into M's office to get the top secret mission dossier. That's something I really enjoyed in the film. Javier Bardem, I think he was phenomenal in that film as Mr. Silva. His character as a villain was one of my favorite Bond villains as well. The action I'd say was still on par with many of the Daniel Craig films, being that I felt most of the stunts were very realistic. I didn't feel they were too cheesy or too, we're just throwing these in here because James Bond's like a superhuman. Trying to think what else I really liked about that film. I liked it quite a bit, but I don't know, this silence is making me...
I would agree. Sorry, I was just waiting for you to finish.
No, I know.
I definitely agree about Javier Bardem. He was... I was a little bit worried, especially when I saw his haircut. I was like, do we really need this guy to have another stupid haircut after No Country for Old Men? But when you see his character in the movie, I think the kind of over-flamboyant hair really suits his character.
Very much so.
As a villain, yeah, he's probably easily like top three.
Number two
Bond
to Blofeld
ever for me. Like he would be up there with like Goldfinger
and Blofeld, and I'd put him up there, man. I'd put him on elite Spectre level. But I think one thing I also liked is that he was one of their own before. That's what I liked. He was the double agent, I guess you would say. I don't know if you could. Could you classify him as a double agent or just an agent gone rogue against them?
He's yeah, just like a bad egg. Just like an agent that went bad.
He's like a rat who's eating all the coconuts.
What?
I don't know. I was just trying to make a reference from something in that movie, but it failed.
Okay. No, yeah, like you said, it's definitely the Bond movie that sort of brought me back and really brought me back into the world of James Bond. And I felt like I was watching a classic James Bond film in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
Like it felt like they were going back to sort of that Sean Connery style, where it was still a little bit grittier than the Roger Moore years, but it still was having fun with itself. It still was a little bit goofy, and it knew that it was a James Bond movie, and it knew the rules, so to speak, of a James Bond film, and played around with them a lot. So, yeah. Skyfall, like I said, it would probably be number 12 if I could extend this list a little bit. But that's what happens when you see a lot of movies. Some of them make the list, and some of them get kicked off. It doesn't mean I don't like them. There's at least, like, 20-30 movies I saw this year that I really, really liked and would love to see again, but only 11 can make the list.
Dun, dun, dun.
So,
Saruman.
Anyways, on that note, I guess that'll bring us to our number one on our top 11 list. Finally, the people who listen through all our ramblings and random nonsense are being rewarded. As long as they didn't just fast forward to this part of the podcast, which I can't say I blame them. Anyways, my number one is Silver Linings Playbook. I've been a fan of David O. Russell for a while now. I think ever since I probably saw The Fighter first, and then I went back and watched I Heart Huckabees and Three Kings. And so I was kind of looking forward to this movie. I wasn't really sure what to expect. It got a little bit more hype after it won the audience choice at TIFF. But it was one I kept wanting to see, but it wasn't playing in theaters anywhere, so I never had a chance. And then finally, maybe less than a month ago, I got a chance to go see it, and I just adored this movie. Like, the dialogue, the characters, the acting. Especially, I really got into the relationship between Bradley Cooper and Jennifer Lawrence. Just felt very real to me. For those who didn't see it, basically Bradley Cooper plays this guy who is recently released from a insane asylum, basically, and he finds out he has bipolar disorder, And his mom comes and picks him up and takes him back home. And he hasn't had a job for a while. His wife has left him. His life is left in shambles. But he has this incredible positivity throughout the whole movie, which is I think why I liked him so much. He just carries this positivity with him of, like, Excelsior! I'm gonna, you know, make a silver lining out of everything bad that's happened to me. And he meets up with Jennifer Lawrence, who has recently lost her husband. He was a cop and has just recently
died. In the Hunger Games, right?
And they sort of form this weird relationship where he wants to get together with his ex-wife, and she doesn't really want to have a serious relationship with anyone, so they sort of, like, have this mutual thing going on where he's like, if you help me get my wife back, I'll help you with this dance competition you're doing. And, yeah, I don't know. It's a fun movie, great performances all around, and I just loved it.
I also really enjoyed it, and it was one of those films that I basically kind of knew that was going to be on yours. So sort of like Zero Dark Thirty, I really enjoyed the film, but I kind of left it off because I'm like, a lot of people are talking about this one, but I really liked it though. So don't get me wrong.
Fair enough.
Scott?
Yes.
So no other thoughts on this movie?
Has Scott died? Oh no.
No, I have not died. I haven't seen it, so I have no real thoughts to input.
Oh, okay. Well, I love Jennifer Lawrence, and
don't we
if
all,
she's listening to this podcast, she should marry me. But other than that, I have nothing else to say.
No, she should marry me!
No!
You know what?
Because I'm
you
the whiniest!
Become polygamist.
That's why I deserve her!
Polygamy!
I can quote obscure French movies.
Wee wee! I can too, see?
I have no discernible skills!
Wee wee! Yeah, well, I want to smoke in the church!
Except for the skill of being awesome.
Oh, you.
We all have that skill. Yeah, the weird thing that I found out later is that Jennifer Lawrence is actually 15 years younger than Bradley Cooper.
Yeah, that's a little odd.
It's like, that's a little creepy, but I can accept it in the movie because I was like, in the movie universe of Silver Linings Playbook, I can accept that maybe Bradley Cooper is 5 years younger than he is in real life and that Jennifer Lawrence is 5 years older.
I can't
and
believe
so maybe
how young
there's
she
only
is,
5 years between them instead of 15.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. It didn't really be that off-putting. But
yeah. Yeah, they had good chemistry, so it made up for that. And Robert De Niro was just fantastic in this movie. I think I want Christoph Waltz to win Best Supporting Actor. We'll probably do an Oscar show shortly, so I won't talk too much about this, but I would love it if Robert De Niro won as well. Because this was just, in recent memory, I mean, he's done better performances overall, like Raging Bull, The Godfather Part 2, etc. But in recent memory, this is probably the best performance I've seen him in the last few years.
Yeah, I could definitely agree with that. He hasn't done any real heavy performances, and this kind of brought him back into that A-list level actor material.
Yeah. All right, so I've rambled on about this movie enough and why I love it. So, Andrew, your number one.
All righty. My number one is actually a movie I saw yesterday. And this film just hit me on such a gut emotional level that I couldn't see any other choice than to make it my number one. And that is Amour. Now, I'm usually not one who cries during movies much, but I would have to say this movie brought me to tears throughout its almost entire running time. So it just really emotionally draining film. And here, I'll give kind of a little summary of it. Basically, it's an older couple who are kind of living happily. They kind of have an interesting culture. The older woman is a piano player. And then the older woman kind of suffers a stroke. And it's just, it starts out with them kind of just dealing with the fact that she can only use a limited amount of her body now. She can't play the piano like she used to. and all the struggles that come with this, but and just when you think maybe things are going to be okay, maybe they can work with this, she gets another stroke. And it just destroys you emotionally. It's one of those films that you really can only see once. I don't know if I could really watch this again because it just hit me on such a gut emotional
that's
level.
That's funny because I watched it with my friend Celia, who I also the Indonesian girl I went to see The Raid with. And we both said literally the exact same thing. Like, I walked out, and then we went to see another movie after that. And I said, I love that movie, but I don't think I could ever watch it again in my life. Like, I've sat through it once. I don't think I could bring myself to sit through it again, because it's so emotionally heavy and emotionally draining that it's like... It's like a task to watch it, almost.
Yeah, and it kind of brought into light... Yeah, I'm just going to read this Louis C.K. quote that I think kind of almost perfectly sums up the movie for me. It's a bit of a paraphrase from he's going on about all the different types of love, and he's going, or you'll meet the person who you love infinitely, and you even argue well, and you grow old together, and you have children, and then you get old together, and then she's going to die. That's the best case scenario, is that you're going to lose your best friend and then walk home from DeGosto's with heavy bags every day and wait for your turn to be nothing also. And it just, that kind of just sums it up, basically. Like, this is the best case scenario, and it's still horrible. It's just so, so sad.
That's funny, because it's true. And I go to a church that has a lot of old people at it, and so I've never experienced this firsthand, but I know of a lot of people that have gone through stuff like this, and people at my church or relatives and family friends that have gone through strokes and getting cancer. I've already lost three of my grandparents for different reasons. So I think this is a movie that hit close to home for me and for anyone watching it, really. I think everyone knows someone who's been through something like this. So,
yeah,
it's a very, very difficult experience.
Yeah, it's very, very an emotional choice for me, I would say.
Now, is it bad that I didn't, like, even though this movie impacted me, I didn't really cry? I don't know, I'm just not a crier. I think that's part of my Asperger's, but...
Yeah, no, I can understand that. I just... Hamburgers? It just destroyed me emotionally, and I was like, oh my gosh, so many tears. And I just, like, felt like, I was like, ugh, I'm not very manly, but I admit that I cried quite a bit during the film. And I just love how this movie is just... The entire movie is very much focused on the actors. That it's not directed flashy or anything like that. It's basically all the actors.
A lot of the cinematography is just they plant a camera in the middle of a room and they just let it roll for like 3 to 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Just pointing in one direction and it never moves. And there's almost zero camera movement in this entire movie. It cuts. And even when it cuts, it doesn't cut that often.
Yeah.
So, it's a little bit... I found it a little bit distracting at first because I didn't know to expect it. And after a while, once I got used to it, it wasn't so bad. And there's no music in the movie either. So there's nothing really... A normal movie will use camera movement and music and lighting and stuff like that to sort of guide your emotions. This movie doesn't do that. It's basically saying... it's basically letting you feel what you should feel simply because of the situation and because of what these people are going through. And it's not sort of dictating what you should feel based on the sad music that's playing in the scene or anything like that.
Yeah, I definitely can agree with everything you said. Anyways, I don't want to ramble too much longer because I know we've been gone pretty long, but yeah, this is just a film I really, really loved.
All right, so Scott, what is your number one?
My number one is Django Unchained, and that was the end of the episode. Take care, folks.
Are you serious? Or?
No, I'm dead serious.
Okay. You don't have anything to add about Django Unchained or how wonderful it was? I mean, I already talked about it earlier.
No, so What I really enjoyed about Django Unchained is one thing. I never see any Western genre films ever. They don't make them anymore. Well, that many.
Yeah.
When was the last time you saw a Western? And someone's going to say Cowboys and Aliens, but shh.
Meek's cut up.
Like a triple A, like a big blockbuster cowboy Western, which is what a Western is. I sound like an idiot.
Probably True Grit, I would say. Like the Coen brothers' True Grit was probably the biggest one. And that was like 2 years ago, so. Or maybe three.
I mean, yeah. They're so few and far between.
Yeah.
And it's something about the Tarantino style as well that I felt played into the whole spaghetti Western so well. See, a lot of the laughs and comedy, I guess, of it went really smooth. What do you call it? Went really well into the story. Like when Django first, he's like, "You can pick out your own outfit, partner. You know it." He's like, "You're not gonna tell me what to wear?" No, you can pick it. And he picks the most ridiculous looking thing. I enjoyed that kind of scene. It really made me laugh.
Yeah, but a lot about that film. Tarantino is like the best when it comes to visual humor.
Oh. Like, even you got Jonah Hill, who's in it literally for 1 minute of the entire film. With the whole, yeah. I guess, the KKK. But that even the most scenes that should be so offensive with the subject matter he is talking about and touching, he turns that into a scene that you see the humor in it. And how it is kind of stupid, some of these things. Like, you look at the KKK, how it is a stupid kind of idea. And just the stupid thing, like the whole argument goes on for a few minutes about the white sheets they're wearing, the bags on top of their heads. It's just the dialogue in this film too. Tarantino's always known for exceptional dialogue. And even just the way the two characters, interact with each other, like Christoph Waltz's character and Django. There's a lot about this movie that I really enjoyed, hence why it being my number one. I enjoyed the soundtrack of this film. Again, all the actors who were in it played their role very well. Like, Leonardo DiCaprio, his character.
One guy who never gets mentioned or, like, gets the credit he deserves is Walt Goggins as, like, the Leonardo DiCaprio's sort of right-hand man. Kind of like hired gun sort of dude.
Oh yeah, he's in Dexter, if I'm thinking right.
Okay, I've never seen Dexter, so.
Oh, watch
I wouldn't know.
It's a good show.
But he's a very underrated actor. But yeah, I never really got to touch on the soundtrack either. Very, very strange for a Western movie. Because this movie to me was like a half Western, half blaxploitation film.
Yes.
So the music
went with that genre.
Really reflects that it's half Western and then half like sounds like the soundtrack to Shaft.
Yes.
Or like a hip hop soundtrack with songs by RZA and stuff like that. Like there's a big African American music influence in it, but then it'll go into like these Western themes from The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly and stuff like that. But it flows together nicely and it always fits with the scene. Like it never really felt out of place.
So. Correct. I feel the same way.
Awesome. So yeah, I think I already basically said what I wanted to say about Django Unchained earlier. So that about wraps it up, I think.
I think it does.
Jeez. We've been rambling about movies forever. And what I want to do next week, if you guys are braced for it, is a show about the Oscar nominations. And basically looking at who we want to win and who was nominated and who should have been nominated and blah, blah, blah. So.
Sounds good.
Are you guys
good.
Down for that? You're not really saying anything.
I'm always down for Oscar talk.
Awesome. Okay. So that's going to be our next show for Movie Madness. So yeah, I hope you guys enjoyed our look at the top 11 movies of 2012. Like I said, I know not everyone's going to agree with our list. People are going to be upset about things that we left off. a few big movies that I left off. Like, I didn't include Dark The Knight. Hobbit on my list. None of us included The Dark Knight Rises. None of us included Argo.
Or One Night in Paris. Or Lincoln, actually. Or
Midnight in Paris. That was last year.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm talking about the Paris Hilton film.
That was the best movie of the year.
No. Everyone forgot about that film. That's
yeah,
a
Lincoln
gem.
Was another one that almost made my list. Argo was another really big one.
I actually didn't get a chance to see Argo. That was one of my must-sees that I haven't seen yet. So,
okay. I felt like it was a little overrated, but bleh. That's a whole different discussion. So again, for those who are listening to this, if there's any movies that we missed that you were like, holy crap, how could none of you have put The Dark Knight Rises, for example, you know, send us an email and tell us how much you hate us. And that would be awesome. We will definitely read that on the air. Send it to feedback@thisweekingeek.net, subject line Movie Madness, and tell us what you thought of our list. Were they stupid? Were they good? Did you agree? Which one did you agree with the most? Etc., etc. So, I guess that about wraps it up, guys. So, for this week's Movie Madness, we have been...
Andrew Roebuck.
And...
Scott 5. I guess, actually, no, Logan 5. See, that works.
And David Double D Dennis. And thanks for listening to our wonderful ramblings about film. There will be more of those to come next time on Movie Madness.
Wanna see me make bubbles with my spit?
Sure do. In fact, that's the theme of our next show. So don't miss it.
What the hell happened to George Lucas?
Oh my god, there's snot on my face. And I'm your host, Mike the Birdman Dub. And I'm not a join. Not a join. What the f*** does that mean? F*** that. 10 seconds.
No, you gotta keep that.
Let's do this. Let's do this right the first time.
F*** you guys. Ew, it's in my mouth. Oh, god.
Oh, what's it taste like, Mike?
Water. Ew, salty.
Let's start this episode with shat.
Okay, I'm good. Geico.
Holy shit. Oh my gosh. Freak. Die. Holy crap. Whoa. Whoa, my god. Whoa. Where did it go?
I'm like a stupid monkey.
As you can imagine, they don't let us out much.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek. Tune in next week to hear, somebody random. I don't know. Maybe even a hot chick. Yeah, let's go with that.
Did anyone ever tell you that you were very, very sexy?
How are you? Actually, no.
They never will.
Check out our website, thisweekingeek.net, for more geek content, as well subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment on this episode, head to this episode post on thisweekingeek.net and comment through Facebook Connect. Or you can call our voicemail line at 817-717-7202. Send us a Twitter message by @replying to @thisweekingeek. Lastly, you can email us at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. This extra music was produced by Pronobozo at pronobozo.com. We'll see you next time, and remember...
Lower your shields and surrender your listenership.